Shalom, everyone. I'll be glad to continue the reading for tonight. I'm going to continue a satsang we read some of last time. How far should the mission go in publicizing its presence? Do we want to reach the masses, or is there some discrimination? Maitreya. Well, we tried to reach the masses, and there wasn't a very big response. Actually, in 1982, we put an ad in many newsletters, etc. We received around 1,000 letters and inquiries. But according to my experience, there's a timetable working in the mission. We cannot be impatient with it. We have to do our best, do everything we can do, and leave the result to the Lord. I have to do my best, and whoever is connected with the mission, really loves the mission, and wants to do something for it, has to do their best. We connect those energies that have already been prepared for this mission, and spread it to the masses in a very subtle way. The prophecies which said this will be done like a thief in the night are very appropriate about the mission. It sounds like we're not making big headlines, but we are quietly and like a thief in the night creeping into the world. We can put ads, or we can spread the news, or we can let other people know about the mission if we have the ability to do that. Do it and let other people know about the mission. Even if someone can look at the greatest sign just once, that's better for him than if he never sees it, or than if he's never seen it, because that's the seed that's going to be put in his mind. Who knows? Maybe 10 years later, even 15 years later, even 15 lifetimes later, it hits him. He then says, hey, there is something here. There is something there. We have to do our best. We have to reach as many as possible. We have to let it spread. Just like Christ said, we are the messengers. We just give the message out, like throwing the seed to the world with no discrimination. Just throw it as it is. Some of these seeds will fall on the wayside and be destroyed. Some of them will fall on stones and never root. But a few of them will fall in the right place. The soil will be good, and as they receive good water, spirit, and they sprout beautifully, one seed will give 100-fold. This is just like one of our staff who gave good fruit. Of course, God came through her to do it. She was good ground. I wasn't discriminative about giving the message. I gave it to everyone in Florida. I didn't just give it to her, but she was good soil. She was prepared for it, and she received it. She nurtured it, she watered it, she loved it, she tried it. She decided it was good. And God said, that's good. We have to do the same thing. We have to spread the message. Also, there is a missionary in Canada. Someone put an ad in some publication, and he saw it. He didn't know anything about us. And another seed fell in a fertile place. So we have to do our best. We have to reach as many as we can. Of course, as the mission prospers, we will come to a point where we can reach out in a greater degree, and in a way that we can cover the whole earth. I'd like to see that this message goes to every corner of the earth. There will be no place that it is not covered, especially at this time when we have such wonderful communication facilities. In the time of Christ, in the time of Moses, in the time of Abraham or Muhammad, they didn't have these facilities. We can put one message out here, and others hear it a couple of minutes later on the other side of the world. That's wonderful. We see, we have the ability, we have the facilities to do it. For instance, our computer system is connected with 8,000 other computers. When we put a message in our computer, a few days later, all 8,000 computers have that message and look at it. That's wonderful communication. Also, we have the fax. You want to send a message to the mission? Just fax it, and 2 minutes later we receive the message. Our computer system has been set up in such a way that we have all the literature of the mission available. If you have a computer and a modem, call our number and download all the materials we have. You can download the whole book of Tho. You can download Keys 1 to Keys 6. You can download the plan. And of course, this satsang was a while ago, and you don't have to call our number with a modem anymore. It's free on the website for anyone to receive. And now there are 7 keys, not 6. So thanks God. See, we are willing and open to the whole world to receive the message. We don't keep it undercover or anything. No, we put it in the computer, and the computer is connected to the whole earth. Anyone who wants it can call and take it freely. Of course, they have to pay for the telephone call, but we offer our literature free of charge. They can have it. And again, that's, you know, now the internet is not that way. These are the facilities we have to use. These are the things God provided for us to be used in this time period so that this message goes to every corner of the earth. Therefore, in answer to your question, we have to go as far as we can go and use whatever abilities we have. Question. Why would the kingdom of heaven on earth relieve only 90% of the earth's problems? Maitreya said, Who said that? All laughing. 90%? I think the phrase should be the kingdom of heaven on earth will alleviate 99% of the problems that are created by the human ego. These are not the real problems. We have these problems because we separate ourselves from one another. We have these problems because we don't understand one another. For instance, one of the problems we have right now is that the East doesn't understand the West, and the West doesn't understand the East, so they are afraid of one another. I understand both of them. I'm very exceptional in that. I understand how the Eastern mind works, and I understand how the Western mind works. Actually, I was very Westernized when I was in the East. I didn't know anything about yoga, or meditation, or God. I was completely a Westernized person. At the university, I went dancing, went to nightclubs, or just knew about the latest fad or fashion, just like St. Francis of Assisi before his mission started. So I found those things there, and I knew nothing about meditation. Actually, there was a Sufi center just one block from my house. I never even was attracted to go to see what they were doing. I could have gone there, and someone could have said something that made sense to me, and that would have been it. I would have been a Sufi there in the East for the rest of my life. You would have never seen me here. But it didn't happen that way. Probably there was a reason why God didn't want it to happen. So now what should we do? We should understand one another. The kingdom of heaven will accomplish that. As we expand more, we're going to have different cultures mixed together. Probably there is going to be some friction or some misunderstanding or some change of energy sometime. But eventually we will start to know one another better and we will learn from each other. Each culture and people have something to teach other cultures and people. Every culture has some beauty that they can add to create an ultimate varied culture. What is more beautiful? Is it everyone thinking like an Easterner, or everyone looking like those in the Western world? Even in the West, does a European think exactly like an American, or does an American think exactly like a Canadian, or does a Canadian think like a South American? See, even there are so many differences. The more we mix the earth, the more balanced state we will create. Actually, the whole earth is like the two sides of the brain. The East is more heart and emotion, the West is more intellect and mind. So if we mix them, we will have a more balanced earth. Also, why are we meditating? We meditate to unify the mind and the heart. That's one of the things we do by meditating. We bring the mind and the heart together. So we have the heart of the Christ and the mind of the Buddha. We are trying in the mission to do the same thing to the earth, to mix the earth together as the two spheres. As we are doing this, probably 99% of the problems that we have are going to be alleviated by themselves. We don't really have to do anything to them. They are just like some of our own problems. As we meditate, they just vanish. They're not there. So one day we wake up and they're not there. I'm no longer bashful, I'm no longer afraid, or anything that is artificially there. It's the same thing. It's a very subtle mission. It is something that is going to affect everyone very subtly. The people are going to wake up someday and see that we have a viable replacement for what is on the earth. As I said, we are not a revolutionary people, we are an evolutionary people. We are on the brink of an evolutionary change on earth. If we can see the signs, we really have to be blind if we don't see the signs because the signs are all over. We can see everywhere on earth there are signs that we need something. Something has to be done. Why not? Why are we not the people to do it? Someone has to do it. Why not us? If you believe this teaching has the answer for all the problems that we have on earth, and you hear and see the truth in it, then you are one of the pioneers. And the life of a pioneer is not easy. I have to forewarn you, but it's fun, and it is good, God. Question. Probably the question is also, why is there 1% left? Maitreya. Why? About 1%, 1 to 2% of the problems are the real problems. If 98% of our ego problems are solved, that 2% of the real problems are easy to solve with the communities of light. That is why we create the hierarchy. We create the system that can take care of the day-to-day life and problems. Those day-to-day problems are, for instance, a flood. There will be less flooding as we bring the kingdom. The energy will be so good that God will say, no, I'm not going to send any flood, these people are so wonderful. Or famine, or divorce, or whatever the problem is. The real problems can easily be taken care of in our system. So even that 2% of the problems are going to be solved. So with these answers, 100% of the problems are solved. We have no problems. Question. I'm trying to discriminate between the two kinds of problems. I understand that some of them must be lessons. Would that make all the problems, even the ones that vanish, all lessons? The 2% that are left, that we have to work on, are those lessons. All the problems that vanish, are they all lessons also? Maitreya, lessons, you mean as lessons to learn, or lessons to become less? Question, lessons as something to learn. Maitreya, of course there are still going to be some karmic relationships between people, and people going on and learning from the lessons, and so on. But that's going to be much quicker. Everything is going to be quickened, because in the communities of light, everyone meditates. Everyone is quickened. It's easier for one person to live by himself. It's very easy to have your own apartment or house, do whatever you want to, and not care for the rest of the world. You don't progress either. You see? Because you think you are wonderful, you never see your problems. You never encounter those problems. You do whatever you want to, and everything looks good to you. Now, two people marry, and they want to live in one place. There are some problems. All laughing. I'm not as wonderful as I thought. This other person starts criticizing and finding some fault in me. That amazes me. Oh, I have faults? I thought I didn't have any faults. Now couples come together to form a community. There are in the community at least 6 couples, 12 people living pretty close. Oh, we really have to watch out, don't we? If we can get along with 11 other people, create an environment where everyone is comfortable and loving, reach a point where we can tolerate each other, learn from one another, and create an environment that is flowing, we are in pretty good shape, aren't we? So in the communities of light, you progress much, much faster because there are encounters all the time between the members. Of course, you can take your bag and go away. There's always that option. But remember, you're not going to progress. You have the option to be self-centered, take your bags, and leave. Also, you're going to be lonely, aren't you? And another question. You talk about 12 persons, 6 couples. What about the ones who are not couples? What do you do with them? Maitreya. Well, you don't let them into the communities of light. And everyone was laughing. It is recommended that if there are married couples in the community, they take the singles to live with them. If you are not married, then you can live with the married couples in the community. The whole base of the communities of light is the married couples. It's very, very important, because as the scripture says, man and woman have to find one another and become one. Two people who are each other's part and are pretty much in God consciousness are already one. See, even if you are not each other's part, if both of you are one for God, if both of you are one with God, you are already one because you are one with God. Two people never can become one because you each have a physical body. These two fingers are never going to become one finger. It doesn't matter how much you try. But if this finger is with God, and this finger is with God, they are one in spirit. A person who is God-conscious and their spirit is always with God has the compassion, love, and understanding. If the other person also has the compassion, love, and understanding, it's very easy for them to get along. So you compromise some. You win some, you lose some. You let this happen between you, and eventually you reach a balance that you both can live with. Balance finishes is based on the couples, that they can establish that balance. But when that balance is reached based on God, they are one. They can flow together. They can live together. They can grow together. They can learn from one another. They can be friends. They can be lovers. They can be whatever they want to be. And that is a beautiful relationship between two beings. Now, someone asked, why marriage? Two people who like each other and can get along with one another don't have to marry. They can just live together. Now it comes to the society, the social approval of a couple to be together. It was very easy in the past. For instance, in the tribe, if a man and a woman were very close, they didn't have to marry. They were just together, and all the tribe knew they were husband and wife. It was very easy for everyone to recognize them as such. Socially, it was acceptable, and that was it, because they really were husband and wife. Now we are living in a society that is more expanded. We can go from this city to another city. If we are married, then we always have a written agreement that shows we are married. Any place we go to any society, we can say we are married, and everyone feels comfortable and relaxed about it. We are accepted. It is a very social thing for a human to be like that. That is also good for the soul. Also, it has legal significance in the marriage in that country. If you're just living together, and 2 years or 10 years from now you decide not to live together, you have no legal rights. But with marriage, you have a paper. You can legally go and say, yes, we were married for 10 years. You were married this much time, now you are divorcing. Then you can settle things between one another much more peacefully, be it in court, without yelling or trying to do all kinds of harm to one another. So there are many, many significances of marrying legally and the marriage ceremony. God wants his people to be married, to be couples, and have children. Also, children have a better future in the marriage. They have a legal father and mother. It's very important that both parents are present in the growth of the child. The mother is as important as the father in the growth of the child. The father is as important as the mother. You cannot take the children and leave them with just the father or mother. I know it is done in the West easily. Divorce is easy. Living together is easy. Even a one-night stand is easy. But that is not the way God created it to be. That is why he made man and woman different. They are equal, but equality does not mean similarity. Man and woman are not similar. If you say men and women are similar, then something is wrong. They are not similar, but they're equal. In their physical, mental, and spiritual progress, they have to be provided for equally. If a woman has leadership ability, fine. That person has to be given the opportunity to do that. Equality does not mean similarity. And because there is not that similarity, they have to come together and be present in the upbringing of the child. So again, there is a significance for the children having legal parents, growing in a loving environment, and becoming productive members of the society. One of the reasons we have so much crime and so many problems in the West right now is because a lot of children are raised with one parent, mostly mothers. With only one parent, what can the poor mother do? She has to go and make money or be on welfare. Either one is not a good alternative. If she goes to work, who is going to take care of the child? If she goes on welfare, what kind of an image is that child going to create by growing up in that environment? Every month she has to go and beg for $200 or $300 just to live for another month and live in a house in a terrible neighborhood. The children are raised in that lower level of self-esteem, so when they grow up, crime is the day-to-day life for such a child. He lives in the crime. For he sees the neighbor rob another neighbor. It is a very prevalent thing. For him, it becomes something that everyone does. For him, that's not something for which he should be put in jail. This is life, and this is the way he is brought up. So you see, there is a very, very deep reason for this. When God says this is the way it is done, again, he's not saying it for himself. He doesn't care. You can have one-night stands, not marry, and have all those things that are done. But what is the result? God knows us. God knows better what is good for us and what is not good for us. We can resist it, we can intellectually not like it, but that doesn't make any difference to what he put down as the way it should be. And I'm not going to change my mind either. If no one's going to accept this teaching, still I can see what's happening, what it's doing to society. How are we going to be? Selfish and self-centered because it looks good to me, so I'm going to do it? Or will we realize, oh, my actions are affecting the whole of society. I am responsible for my actions. I can be a source of the problem. How can I act in such a way that at least I am not the source of the problem? If at least 60 to 70% of the people think like that, then we will see an improvement start happening in this society. Probably 20 to 30% are never going to learn, but that 60 to 70% that does learn is enough. And this question is a follow-up. so there's not very much place for singles in the community. As you were speaking about, just sometimes one or two can be taken care of by the married couples that there are in this community, but the other singles are not able to live in a community of light. Maitreya, there is a part in Tho that explains the different ages, from 1 to 7, from 7 to 14, to 21, to 28, to 35, to 42, etc. From 1 to 7, you're a child. You're in the childish state. From 7 to 14, you're growing up. You're coming to the age of teenage, puberty, and all that. From 14 to 21, you go through the teenage years and come to a point where you can make decisions now as what you want to be. Between 21 and 28, a decision has to be made. Do you want to be single or do you want to be married? If you want to be a married person, then you have to find a proper spouse and get married, start your married life, go on, have your children, and do whatever is proper in life. If you don't want to be married, you want to be single, then you have to follow the life of a renunciate. The life of a renunciate means a person who renounces the world and dedicates himself or herself to the work of God. As in the Bible, Esau, or Jesus, we call him Esau, said, "There are three kinds of eunuchs. There are the ones who are born eunuch, there are the ones who are made eunuch by men, and there are the ones who decide to become eunuch because they want to dedicate their lives to the work of Christ, the work of God." So a decision must be made at that age, or even a little later. We are flexible. We're not saying you have to do it exactly at that time, but you have to make this decision sooner or later in the communities of light. This is the way it is done in the communities of light. Not everyone will live in the communities of light. Eventually, more people will live in the communities of light. We're not there yet, we are here. We are living and we are really dealing with where we are, the energies and the level of consciousness that we are in right now. But think about these things. You don't have to accept them, but think about them. Meditate on these things. Does it make sense? Does it really create problems? Guest. Here's a question. Or I guess a comment. I can see it. When you say it, it sounds good. It seems clear. It looks like a future this way, and the way of the past hasn't worked. There has to be something new, and it has to be firm and strong in that for the future, because we haven't been firm. We've been getting into trouble. We haven't been disciplined on this planet, so this is why the mess. With your plan and married couples, it seems more ethical, more moral. Maitreya, that's right. Some of us have experienced it. Those who have experienced that kind of lifestyle, go and ask them. There is disease there. There are problems, emotional problems, physical problems, mental problems. Those are all related to that kind of lifestyle. Think about it. I'm not saying accept it blindly. Think about it. Meditate on it to see, does it make sense? Is it not much purer if a beautiful virgin woman marries a virgin man compared to anyone can have anyone, or at least pretty loose? It's not something that we should blame ourselves for if we are not a virgin. It is not something that we should feel guilty about, because that's where we live. That's what the society told us to be. They said it was okay. In the 60s, it was okay. Now we are at the dawn of the golden age. Now is the time we understand God's laws and His ways. We do not follow them blindly any longer. We follow them because we understand them, because they are good, God, for us, for our children, for our communities, for our society, and for Earth. And that's the end of this satsang, so I will go ahead and release the mic to the room for the next reader. Thanks, God.